You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 19 December. We've got UK retail sales due later this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. A programming note, this is our last show for 2025. We are back 5 January 2026. On today's show, Keelan Ngluvo, he's an independent property analyst. REITs had a really good 2024, but then they came back again this year. Discount to NAV has narrowed, yields still attractive, but are they good enough for investors? And then Harris Gore from Grove Point Investment Management. He is our private credit expert. I want to get a sense of how the US middle market is doing, volatility, and did April Liberation Day change the picture much? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Keelan Ngluvo. He's an independent property analyst. Keelan, appreciate the time today. The latest global property research market update for November 2025 is out. And I got to say, another strong month. And this comes off the back of, frankly, a really good 2024 and an equally good 2025. Our local REIT spaces is absolutely booming at this point for investors.
Yes, it's been a great year as well. Last year was good, and we thought maybe the market may probably cool down, but the momentum is continued from last year with strong returns. So a lot of positive factors helping to drive this sector, including lower interest rates and better earnings growth. And we've seen the market continue to do well, as well as earnings. There's lots of earnings upgrades.
There has been. And I mean, a lot of this is our property sector peaked around 2017, 2018. The pandemic was an absolute horror show for REITs globally. But if we look at our execs at our local REITs, this really has been 5 years of good discipline for them, reducing debt, exiting non-performing assets. They really have put the hard yards in.
Yes, yes. One thing to point out as well is that the market has been generally prudent in terms of one, initially the phase earlier on was disposals to help reduce our debt levels. Mm-hmm. And we didn't see a fire sale of assets, and most assets were disposed of at or around book value or slightly below book value. And that trend is continued over the years. And we've seen the loan-to-value ratios. They peaked at about 44%, and they've come down to about 37% levels, which is a fairly comfortable level.
I like your point there around there wasn't any fire sales. There was concerns, I think, probably 3-4 years ago that some of the assets were poorly valued on the balance sheets. But in hindsight, they absolutely weren't. They just perhaps weren't the right asset, the right fit for that particular business.
Sure, you're right. And also, it's helped to actually strengthen the balance sheets and have better quality portfolios for most of the REITs and property companies. And the other good point to highlight is that it's helped South Africa to outperform, not just in the listed space, in the direct property market. Over the last year to 2 years, South Africa has been one of the best performing direct property markets in local currency because the values have generally held up. When you do a fire sale of assets, it affects your valuations and direct property values. That's why the market has held up and outperformed.
Yeah, it has. And then the release that came out, I mean, we're actually outpacing developed markets. I mean, developed markets have done fine, but we're doing significantly better than the sort of traditional North America, Europe, UK markets as well.
Sure, sure. That's interesting. Also, the office market has been quite challenging. But you may think it's challenging in South Africa, but it's not as bad as what you've seen, let's say, in the US, for example, where vacancies shot up to 25-30%. Whereas ours below 15%, probably 12-13% levels.
You mentioned office then. If we look ahead to sort of the years ahead, I mean, office is, my sense around it is still tough, but much improved. As you said, vacancies coming down, reversions when they're negative, those numbers are reducing. It's looking, I don't know if it's robust, but it certainly is stronger than it has been in a while.
Yes, so it's stabilizing, and some of the stock is being taken out of the market, and mostly around Johannesburg. You'll see around Sandton, Rivonia, Bryanston, some of the properties are being converted into residential. And so that's taking off the vacant offices off the market and helping to reduce vacancies.
And logistics, that still in our local space remains, I think, the really, really sort of hot sector in terms of property.
Yes, and the vacancies have remained quite low. It's a fairly defensive sector, probably 2 to 3% levels. That's the general vacancy levels in the logistics market. And at this point, it's difficult to find. If you're looking for, let's say, 20,000 square meter warehouse, there's not much available in the market at all.
And how's the retail done? I mean, again, back in the pandemic, it was essentially shut down. I've seen a fair bit of bounce back. I'm seeing, you know, anecdotally, malls seem busier. We had the Hyprop update recently, which kind of suggested that that was happening. Retail also coming back fairly well.
Yes, it has. Generally, we've seen vacancies perhaps stable, slightly coming down. Rental growth positive. It's also been helped by the retailers as well. They continue to expand space. Mm-hmm. And renovate some of their stores. So it's been a generally vibrant sector across all property segments in general, whether it's small regional, neighborhood, community, even the super regionals, not as strong, but they're generally holding up.
If we look to the outlook in the year and years ahead, I mean, what we have seen is a closing of discount to net asset value. And in some cases, the stocks are trading at the net asset value. Yields come down as the prices go up. What's the expectation going forward? I mean, this is a sector that's looking strong, but looks like it's still got potential ahead.
So the valuations are helping the sector even to raise equity. So the current discount on average, you're looking at about 7.5, 7.6% discount to net asset value. So as you trade closer to net asset value, it makes it easier to raise equity. So it's less dilutive. That's one point. And there's more confidence in the market. It shows in the numbers, like year to date, the amount of new equity raised or capital, you're looking at over 11 billion, just about 11.4 billion rand raised. And most of that has been oversubscribed.
Absolutely. I'm reminded, I mean, Storage did a raise just the other week, and it was not only oversubscribed, it was at a ever so slightly premium to that net asset value, which shows significant investor appetite.
Yes, yes. And the other point as well to highlight is that not just on the equity market, even the debt market, debt capital markets, property companies and REITs, they're going into this market cheaper than traditional bank debt. And most of the auctions as well have been oversubscribed. So lots of savings as well when it comes to interest costs there.
You mentioned some of the macro conditions. Certainly that's in their favor, and lots there, grey listings, upgrades, and all the rest. We've seen our longer dated government bond yields coming down. The 10 years, what, about 8.3 last time I checked. Does that add flavor to the property space? Because typically I'm going to look at a property yield and compare it to a government yield. And if that comes down, it adds attraction to the REIT.
Yes, it does. So that's helped the sector as well over the last 2 years with bond yields coming down. And the sector, you're looking at a forward yield of about 7.5 to 8%. So it's lower than the bond market, but then you're seeing earnings growth. So over the next year, earnings are likely to grow by about 5 to 7%, which is quite positive. And then we saw like a good number as well year to date with property companies doing 4 to 6% earnings growth with upgrades.
Yeah, with those upgrades. And certainly we've been seeing a lot of that. Killian Ngluva, independent property analyst, appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Harris Gore, Grovepoint Investment Management. They, of course, run the local AMC on the US private credit market. Harris, appreciate the time. A noisy but ultimately solid year for middle market direct lending. I want to start off with Liberation Day. And when I say noisy, I'm probably underselling it. But we chatted earlier in the year, and you commented back then that really Liberation Day was a pricing event, not a credit event. It was scary, but there weren't defaults.
Simon, I think that sums it up pretty well. There's been a lot of noise this year, and Liberation certainly got us off to a volatile start in April. And frankly, I think the expectation was, even from our side, that there would be more kind of credit knock-on events than were actually realized over the remainder of the year. And in fact, what we're seeing now is an improving kind of credit cycle. But we kind of thought tariffs would have more of an impact than they have had. I think the whole market kind of thought tariffs would have more of an impact.
Yeah.
What we saw in reality was that especially the US middle market was very, very resilient in the face of tariffs. There were a few subsectors that were impacted, mainly companies that were heavily reliant on Chinese imports. So in the toy sector, say, and some of the beauty and cosmetics. But these were very, very, very small parts of portfolios, if at all. So the ripple effect through the middle market just wasn't realized. And when we looked at it a bit more carefully over the year, we kind of know why. Because when you look at those middle market companies, they produce, they manufacture, and they distribute in the US. And
yeah.
When you took a look at their kind of cost of goods sold, you saw almost less than 4% of their cost of goods sold were imported. So tariffs really did have very little impact. And from a Trump point of view, it probably wasn't the worst policy to, in fact, look to support those companies and support
some benefit from it. And the middle market, which is where the private credit predominantly goes to. So tariffs actually maybe just a benefit more than an issue. They're continuing to grow revenue. They're continuing to grow profits. And at the same time, the rates for their private creditors has actually been coming down. They're probably sitting in a better position than they were a year ago, perhaps.
We've certainly seen the credit cycle peak from what the numbers are telling us. So if you cast your mind back to, say, just over a year ago, September 2024, you had SOFR or the overnight, call it risk-free rate or the Fed rate, whatever you want to label it as, sitting at around 5.5%. Mm-hmm. Today, we're sitting at 4%. So you've had 150 basis point cut in Fed fund rates. And these are really floating rate loans. The market is the floating rate market. So any borrower that was kind of had a decent business model but was running against kind of tight cash flows because of the sharp interest rate increases has had a lot of relief over the last 12 months. And we've seen that play through the numbers. So you've had on one end earnings growth, EBITDA growth, and on the other end, essentially your debts become cheaper. So we saw probably the peak in defaults in Q1, Q2 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the numbers have just improved. Interest coverage ratios, non-accruals are inside of kind of 10-year averages. So once again, speaking to how you started, it's been noisy, but the underlying fundamentals have been really solid and improving.
And there have been some blow-ups in the broader credit space, but not in the space that you're operating, not in this private credit space, as I understand. And I appreciate, you know, every blow-up is every headline loves them, but it hasn't been happening in this space from a fund perspective, as I see it.
Yeah, I think from a call it social media or print point of view, it doesn't pay to write about everything's normal and, if anything, slightly improving. Tricolor and First Brands for us were very idiosyncratic blow-ups. Those were more recent blow-ups. The only thing that made those two kind of companies private credit in nature was the fact that they were unlisted companies.
Yeah,
their debt was actually structured by banks, issued as syndicated loans or held in ABS vehicles, CLO vehicles. Mm-hmm. These are all kind of banking engineered debt stacks. So we had no exposure across any of our portfolio to either Tricolor or First Brands. And actually, Simon, when you look at the broader universe, so we see about 130, say, listed vehicles out there that you could invest in. We probably look at 45 of those and say those are high quality vehicles that we would invest in. And then you narrow that down to us holding 15 to 25 of those vehicles at any one time. Across our broader universe of, say, 45 investable, none of them had any exposure to those two names. So these weren't direct lending names. They weren't names that fit into direct lending portfolios. They were kind of more esoteric type credits.
Absolutely. And as we sit now, and you know I've chatted about this before, is that funds you're buying, they trade, they sometimes get volatile, they trade at premium to NAV, and sometimes they trade at discount to NAV. And you make the point that you're seeing that discount to NAV there, which gives you an almost immediate uplift. You're kind of almost getting sort of equity-like potential returns from what is sort of really secured cash flow lending.
Simon, so when we look back, we've seen a few of these instances over the last 10, 15 years. The last one really being kind of September 22, where we saw a big sell-off in the market. It was when rates started going up and everyone panicked and thought there was going to be a big kind of default cycle on the back of the Fed increasing rates as sharply as they did. The default cycle didn't materialize, but the entry point at that point was very attractive. And post that, we saw the strategy we run generate 20% in 2023. And I think 11% last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from this kind of discounted entry point. And we've seen that happen again with the recent headlines, the sell-off in the market. Once again, there've been fears about a default cycle. We're kind of seeing the fundamentals moving the other way, but prices in the listed market a few weeks ago were trading at 0.8 of book value. And what that effectively means is that you're buying a loan that's marked at 100. So if you're in one of these evergreen vehicles or semi-liquid vehicles or in a private credit fund, that loan remains marked at 100. and you're buying it in the listed market at 80 cents on the dollar. So that does two things. One, it juices up your returns when things normalize.
Yeah.
And or if things don't normalize and actually the listed kind of retail market is correct, which is not where we think it is at the moment, you're protecting your downside because you're already buying that loan at a discount to book value. So you're essentially kind of covering yourself for that first 20 cents of losses. And what we've seen in the amongst the high quality lenders is when these loans do go bad, they tend to recover a lot of their kind of value. Mm. So you really are getting a far more attractive trade buying into the listed market at these levels, both on the downside and the upside.
And the upside. And within, I mean, we're talking, you don't go and buy a single loan. There are thousands of loans packaged in these.
It's another advantage of trading in the NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange listed vehicles is that each vehicle has anything from 70 to 500 loans, depending on the manager and how large the vehicle is. In our current portfolio, I think we have 3,580 loans or 3,580 borrowers.
Yeah.
And Alan, we've touched on this a few times over the years that when you're investing in credit, if you can get to a certain quality of credit, so you want high quality credit, senior secured lending, good lenders, guys who can get in there and work out loans that go bad. And then you want as much diversification as possible because your yield's always going to be that 10, 11%. That's kind of where that private credit market trades.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get paid 15% suddenly because the company is doing well. So you don't want the, call it alpha you get from an equity fund where you want a manager to put their neck on the line and concentrate their positions. In this type of strategy, you really want as much diversification as you can get while sticking away from or staying away from cyclical sectors and kind of more volatile performers and more esoteric names like the ones we've seen more recently in the headlines.
We'll leave it there, Harris Gore, Growthpoint Investment Management. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We hire every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll be back 5 Jan. Have a great Christmas and New Year.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.